Yeah, I ate a Stroop waffle.
Motherfucking Stroop waffles.
Stroop.
Stroop and waffling.
Nope. Stroop waffle. All right, I'll take a piece of yours. What the fuck? Give me a little corner.
You sound crazy.
All right, we're recording. Oh. Just recording the sound of our Stroop and waffles.
From the heart of Amsterdam.
From the city that brought you high college kids blacking out on the street.
And Stroop and waffling.
You know, those things, as I was peeing, I was thinking, you know, those things are an invention. Yeah. You know, somebody did it for the first time and was like,
this is good. Exactly. Where were we?
Well, this is the Pantecto Quarantcast. It's our podcast that we haven't done in months.
It's our 25th anniversary podcast.
Yep, that we started with the pandemic.
Yeah, we've even got episodes that are already recorded that you haven't even tried
That's
editing.
Right. No, I have edited.
What, Jaws?
Yeah, Jaws.
Wait, you did Jaws during the quarantine?
Yeah.
All of this was during the quarantine.
Oh, okay.
There's no other reason why I would have a podcast.
You should name this podcast something that has quarantine in it.
Pandecto Quarantcast.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
That's what it is, yeah.
I know.
That was my idea.
It was my idea.
Well,
I don't think that. And it's idea. Not, I'm not actually that proud of it. Today on our podcast.
I was trying to take the weight for you. I was trying to be your
You jumped
bullet.
In front of that bullet for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It reminds me of the time I used to have a band, and I convinced my bandmates that the name Mutant Sleeve was a good name.
Yeah, Mutant Sleeve. And that's when I met her.
That's right.
And fell in love.
But it was like, I convinced them. I really worked hard on convincing them. And then finally when they came around, I was like, wait, this is actually a bad name. And they were like, no, it's really good and we like it now. And I was like, wait, no, I was wrong. This is a bad name.
You sold them on it.
But then that was our name.
And then the band broke up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Do you think it was because of the name?
Mutant Sleeve was not destined for, you know, longevity. Today on the podcast, we have our dear friend, pod member, screenwriter, lovely, you know, man around town.
Man about town, I think.
Man, no, he's around.
He's just around.
D.V. DeVincentis.
Hi. Thanks for saying it so well.
Did I say it?
Yeah. Nobody ever says my name right, but you just did.
Hell yeah, dog.
You may know him from such movies as...
Yeah, I know, right?
Splash.
Waterworld.
Splash 2. I didn't have anything to do with Splash 1.
Right. A lot of... you know, I always thought Splash 2 had definite spark.
Thanks.
No, I thought they really should have... They really should have picked that up.
I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
But you wrote High Fidelity. You wrote...
Gross Point Blank.
Gross Point Blank. You wrote The People vs. O.J. Simpson. Stop Me When I'm...
That's good.
Right? Is that enough?
Yeah,
is
some other project.
Does that sum your life up?
I have... Yes. Those are all things that I... Yes.
An actual man in the industry.
Yeah, but you don't let it fool you.
We're going to get a real man of the industry's take on a movie. Oh, wait, should we smoke some hash?
I got so high on that hash when I was here, you know, the last time I was here doing laundry at your Airbnb in Amsterdam when we were watching CNN after Biden was declared the winner. I got super high to the point where I couldn't talk anymore.
God, where were you?
I didn't
you
know that.
Where were you when you knew?
Well, I could talk a little bit.
Where were you when you knew that that joy that you were feeling was going to end soon?
What?
Which joy?
The joy of Biden becoming president.
Oh.
Like, yeah, by the time this podcast airs.
Biden will have taken over the presidency, because that's about how long it takes for me to edit a podcast. January 20th will have come and gone.
Murdered Biden.
Yep.
Yeah. Hash. Okay, hold on. Cheers, brother. This is great. So we started this thing without how is your day, because... How was your day? It just doesn't cover it anymore, does it, sweetie? I mean, we were...
Well, you just brought it up, so how was your day, babe?
No, sweetie, you can't. It's...
He doesn't like, because I do the intro, and I'm always like, how was your day? And I use that as a way to...
We've been sitting here in this house for months.
Yeah, have you had any guests yet before me?
Yes. My friend Drew, who's sort of in the industry, but...
Drew. Drew's the
kind
best.
Of
He's not in
is...
the pod. How have I not met another pod member that I'm in?
Well, he's not... I mean...
He's in the New York
he's
pod.
He's in the okay. pod, but yeah, right. He actually was part of our pod. He came over from...
Is he
from
the one
my...
that was making the special requests from the Leather Daddy shop across the street?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Drew's been the only other guest, right?
Quinn called in one time for like a second.
That's right. Quinn did call in.
I mean, he didn't call in...
Terminator, right?
He literally called while we were watching the movie, so without telling him, we just put him on speaker and included him in the podcast. So that's kind of how we do things.
You know, this movie that we're going to be watching, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which Emily has never seen, which I do remember as a classic. But I also just recently had my faith shaken a bit in my personal memory of how movies are classics or not, because we just watched Jaws. And I will say that while there are some cool things in Jaws, it's also a full-on B-movie. And I was really annoyed by the fake Robert Altman dialogue style. Like, Steven Spielberg is just not that fucking dope a director to pull that off.
We're definitely going to have some of that in Close Encounters.
Yes, I remember that specifically.
Like, vividly, I remember the dinner scenes where Dreyfus is starting to lose it, and the sort of like...
They're just constant. The children talking, the mom scolding them. It's
crosstalk,
bullshit realism. It's like...
Totally.
It's like, look, man, I know that this golden is kind sink of realism. Like shitty 80s families are like, I get it, but we go to the movies to escape that shit. I don't want reality to be like mimicked perfectly. Not about
you mean like... This is like what's happening right now. We've got the Apple screensaver with... I can never determine if it's animation or if it's...
I think it's real. It's not.
Okay. Because I was like, that is a humpback whale's vagina if I've ever seen one.
Oh.
Well, here we go. Ready?
Oh.
Hold on.
And...
Wait for
four of its vaginas right there on display. How's your day today, DV?
My day was good. I got a bad haircut. And then, you know, it was a particularly beautiful day. Okay. I had a big day of administration where I had to, like, figure out how to get my dog to England, put him on a boat, and pick out the boat stuff. We talked about that.
Yeah. They said, sir, which boat would you like? You said, please, this one.
I was like, here's $5. Put me on the cool boat, whatever the cool boat is.
I'll take a sailboat.
then I ate a fucking insanely good Mexican meal in Amsterdam
Mexican a la Blue
Made by
piece.
The co-host right here, Emily.
Yeah. That's right.
Mexican a la panic.
And that's literally what I spent my entire day doing, was because everybody's got bikes, but I'm too scared to use a bike yet. And I also don't have a bike. So I just like walked, you know, 30 minutes to this place to get like knives and bowls and, you know, cooking tools. And then I walked an hour in total to literally just get cilantro and a white onion from like DePip. So I ran all around town today. Simply collecting ingredients to make a delicious Mexican meal for my pod.
No one ever said that Mexican meals would be easy to prepare in Amsterdam.
And they're not, because grocery store... I had a fucking near meltdown in the grocery store because I had to, like, people waiting for me to check out, and I had to then run and go weigh some vegetables, and the thing was in Dutch, and I didn't know what the fuck to do, and I'm standing there, and it's just like, you know, it's like in the movie where you're just like, you close up on the eyes and there's sweat dripping down, and I'm just like trying to hit buttons, and I just like glance over at the line of people kind of like tapping their feet like, what's going on?
Like, she doesn't know to touch the splashing nerve.
Yeah.
You just wave your fingers like this.
Yeah. No, the dude did end up coming up and doing it and like pressing the button, and I was like, he's like, oh, sorry,
that
I forgot,
happened to me
all
too.
In Dutch. Yeah.
Can I just say something?
What?
Just gotta talk about something.
I feel like the way that you're
setting
this
up some realness.
What I was gonna say is that I really need to understand how I can make fun of the Dutch, because I want to so badly, just as much as they probably are making fun of me and my.
What's
people.
The angle?
I need to know, like, what are the common names so I can mock them?
Or like,
what are the, what you know, how does the language work so I can pretend to use it?
Or what are the stereotypes? I went, when I went and hung out with my high school buddy who's lived here forever, he was telling me that there's a thing called, like, it's like Dutch honest. Like,
like too honest. It's like just almost German honest.
Yes.
Is that a thing?
German honest is the hammer to your head.
Yeah,
like,
German honest is straight
like,
up rude.
Look, I'm just being honest, but did you ever think about not making music?
About how maybe you are washed
like,
off.
Yeah, I mean, I come to your shows and it seems sad to me. you know, that's like German, that's like when you're getting like staring down the barrel of a quote unquote honest German stranger that just needs to tell you something. And that's
weird. Why did you think you should make another record after the last one wasn't even very good?
Yeah. Did it hurt to lose your talent?
Do you feel like you still have it even though you don't? Yeah.
It's funny that you try. I think that's very encouraging for silly people.
So what's Dutch Honest then? It's like a
maybe
step...
Maybe a level below that, like a couple levels below that.
Yeah, it's like, you know... It sounds just like German Honest. Like it's like...
Directness.
Just a, yes, directness past the point of necessity.
Right. Right.
See, here's the thing. Like, just because you tell the truth doesn't mean you have to speak. Like, you know? Like, you can just choose not to speak because telling the truth to a stranger at that moment as you see it may just be rude, you know? Maybe that's just not necessary. I think, like, I remember that movie with Ricky Gervais where he thought he was fucking brilliant and he was like, I'm going to make a character where the trick is we can't tell any lies and then I invent a lie and...
Oh, right, right.
It was just a fucking contrived.
And I'm like, yeah, I've seen Liar Liar and it's a brilliant film. You didn't need to remake it.
I honestly didn't see Liar Liar.
Yeah, we might have to watch that movie. I don't
is
know if it
good?
Really...
I feel like that was the tail end of Carrie's star.
Have you seen Liar Liar? I mean, it's not good.
I did.
But
I do
enjoy
it. I can't really
it.
Remember it.
Okay. So we're going to watch Third Encounters of the Second
Third.
Kind.
We're going to watch Third.
Yeah, we're going to watch Third Kind.
Third Encounters of the Second Kind.
Yeah, we're going to watch that shit.
Julia Phillips, Michael Phillips production. Mm-hmm. Husband, wife, brother, sister?
Husband, wife.
Mm.
You know for a fact.
Yeah, for sure.
Davies in she the wrote industry.
She wrote a famous tell-all book that said, it was Hello, He Lied. Or it might have also been You'll Never Eat Lunch in This Town Again. Huh. One of those two.
About her husband?
No, it was like her memoir about Hollywood.
Now, please enjoy listening to us watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Spoilers ahead.
Okay, it's really dusty.
In the opening scene, we see a car pull up in what appears to be an incredibly windy desert.
Why are they having this conversation? This is such a weird opening to a movie.
It's just like guys arguing.
Francois Truffaut, ladies and gentlemen. Turns into a really good performance in this movie.
I feel like they could have been like, let's have this conversation inside and we'll
should
sort
we
of-
maybe, you know, talk inside?
Oh, right. Right. I forgot about those. Yeah. A squadron of World War II fighter planes that went missing are suddenly dropped in the middle of a desert.
God, what a weird way to open a movie, I think.
Yeah.
Because, like, I have no idea what just happened.
Okay, we were doing a lot of talking, which is what we're here for.
Yes.
But just so you know, there's these planes that appear out of nowhere. They're
right.
In mint condition. They went missing together as a squadron mysteriously in 1945 off of the coast of Florida. And suddenly they are just back. Their gasoline is still in. The photos aren't faded.
Right.
They've reappeared
they
in
time.
They
look new, yeah.
In the middle of a desert thousands of miles away.
Oh, where did they disappear from?
Florida.
Okay, okay.
And it's neatly arranged, not having landed and on running, you know, like. Yeah.
And that dude, they were just like, he's got something to tell you. The sun
sun last night, and it sang to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they met the one guy who still talks like that in the 80s.
What do you mean still talks like that?
It's like someone who didn't understand that technology existed would talk, you know?
Oh. Because, yeah, the aliens, like, shone a light or something. He was like, the sun came out and sang.
If only we could translate.
I speak in primitive poetry.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
There you go, Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah, here it goes.
Now we cut to an air traffic control center in Indianapolis where the air traffic controllers are communicating with a pilot right as he spots a UFO.
They're talking.
And if we started talking over each other... About them talking, then that would be really good,
and
the audience would really understand what we were talking about.
We don't even know what it is.
I know.
No, but radar's coming.
There's green lights on the screen.
Which is weird.
He was like, "I want to talk over those guys too."
Hey guys, can I talk?
Do I want to make everybody in my business think I'm insane?
Negative.
Next, we see a little boy home in his bed. It is calm and quiet for a moment until all of his toys inexplicably become animated on their own.
He's got some real annoying-ass toys, this kid. That monkey is really going for it with the...
the window. If it was my room.
The child, Barry, gets up and goes downstairs where we see that the fridge is open and all the food is out on the floor. The front door is also open and there is an eerie mist. Next, we cut to the mother, Jillian's room, where she is awakened by the sound of the toys. After finding that Barry is not in his room, she looks outside to see him standing in the lawn before slowly walking away.
Lady, what are you doing? Run outside. It's an infant child running around outside. Why would you call him through the window?
That's a cool shot, though.
That's the way they do it down on the farm.
Next, we cut to Roy Neary, played by Richard Dreyfuss, an electrical lineman who gets a call at home and is sent to investigate a large-scale power outage nearby.
Classic dad's just doing his thing.
Yeah, there's just always like a kid in the background, like smacking the ball against the thing.
It's just so great because it's so contrived, but in a good way. Like, you just know there's somebody off camera going like, okay, and start with the smashing of the thing.
Yeah. He's like, this is real life.
It's kind of great.
Every night in Muncie, Indiana, there's a kid somewhere smashing a doll.
God, the pure disdain Steven Spielberg has for families. It's palpable.
Nope. Product placement.
I think this is actually before the days of product placement.
Really?
I don't think it happened at this point.
You think they're just showing all these brands?
Yes. Spielberg would have been on the cutting edge. Because he did do Reese's Pieces. That might have been the first fucking big piece of product placement. Yeah. The E.T. Reese's Pieces.
And wasn't that like a new product?
Was it?
I think it was. That sounds like an old candy. No.
Right, yeah, I guess you're right. It's probably
they used to just be Reese's. The pieces didn't come along until later.
Yeah, man. Damn, I want some Reese's.
Pieces.
They developed the piecing technology in the 80s, actually.
This is actually...
This is so good. Turkey being the sick burn back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Turkey. We say turkey. We call each other turkey.
We use the word turkey in our household in that way.
We do.
Oh, remember maps?
No.
Is it an alien spaceship pulling up behind him? Yes.
So cool. I like how drunk the aliens are. They're just like drunkenly fucking with stuff. Right? It's like ghost drunks.
Yeah, they're just... Just poking earth.
That's a cool shot.
It's so fucking cool.
They must have, like...
You picked them up.
Yeah, actually moved that car.
Yes. Yeah. They have it on a rotisserie, and the camera's locked in.
Yeah, but he amazingly didn't look like he was moving. I don't think Richard Dreyfuss is attractive in this movie.
So you don't?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Give him some time.
He was like, kind of had something in Jaws.
You would have.
Oh. Hold on.
Jaws Dreyfuss could have got it.
Maybe.
After having his alien encounter in the car, we see Roy driving recklessly and scraping the side of his car on the median.
Oh.
Huh. He's in that much of a hurry.
Damn.
Then we see Barry, the child from before, running down a different road.
What the fuck is wrong with this kid, man? Like, first of all, this kid is like a marathon runner.
The fuck is this guy? Are they aliens?
No.
They're just a weird family.
What the fuck? Why would they just be whistling as some kid came up to them?
Roy almost hits Barry with his car, but Jill, Barry's mom, shows up and grabs him just in the nick of time.
And she lets him go again.
Yeah, she's like, oh, yeah. Sorry, he does that. This he runs kid. Into the highway. He looks like he knows something. Something mystical.
There you go.
Whoa. Looks so small.
Those are fucking great spaceships. I'm sorry. They're so good.
They're good. All right. Everybody needs to get the fuck out of the road.
Also, cops chasing aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's really
80s
good.
Cops chasing yes. aliens. Let's get them, boys.
Just keystoning it down the highway.
What?
Hilarious aliens.
Okay, they didn't even pay the toll.
They're hilarious.
They are mischievous. If I didn't know any better, I'd say those aliens have a couple tricks up their sleeves.
That was amazing.
He's just blood-curdling screamed off a fucking cliff.
No, because he landed. It wasn't a cliff. They're like, so we're all going to agree not to talk about this again, right?
After chasing the alien spaceships, the cops pull over and watch as they disappear into the sky, followed by all the power going back on. Roy watches the whole thing too and runs home to wake up his family and bring them to the spot where he saw the aliens.
Get everyone awake and talking at the same time.
Terry Garst just spent her whole career like hanging out with insufferable maniacs.
It's true.
It's what she does.
He's like, listen, this is about aliens. This is not about our failing marriage. Let's not go there.
Back home, tensions begin to rise between Roy and his wife, Ronnie, played by Terry Garr. Ronnie is concerned about her husband's new obsession with aliens, but Roy brushes it off and goes back to the spot, hoping to have another encounter.
Oh my God, that shot was great. Look at this.
Yeah, the movie looks amazing, as does Jaws. It's just the sound. Those tricky aliens. Always moving large. Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, they're fucking rascals in this movie.
They are rascals. They're like, hey, you know what we should do? You still have that ship that we stole? We should just fucking teleport
that somewhere.
Ship to the desert where there's no water.
I know I didn't get rid of it. It's around here somewhere. Yeah.
No, it'd be funny if this ship popped up in a desert. Imagine how confused the humans will be.
She could absolutely get it.
Yeah, she could get it. That kid couldn't get it.
This kid, look at this. He was like, you know, let's just add someone at the piano.
Let's get it back to one. I need a piano in here.
So what's going on?
There's another thing that they're investigating.
He keeps showing up to places where there's been alien action.
The he DV is referring to is Claude Lacombe, played by Francois Truffaut.
Okay. And this alien action is that all of these Hindu people have heard this melody or these tones, and now they've taken it as a sign from God, and they're doing that shit.
Got it.
And Francois Truffaut basically like runs across a globe to get to one of these places and starts bossing people around.
Yeah,
great.
It seems to be the
finds a man and is like, tell me who's in charge.
Yeah, I'm in charge now.
Got it.
Back at the alien watching spot, there are now a bunch of people hanging out waiting to see the ships, and Roy runs into Jillian.
I almost hit your kid. Almost fucking killed your kid. Terry Garr is going to roll up like, what the fuck is happening here?
One UFO in your... Leaving
like, oh God, I forget where
is this the fucking UFO you were talking about? Yeah, I love how it's just normal that this kid is just making a giant. Like, how did he get that much dirt and mud? We would have had to really dig.
Well, that's the thing. It's not.
It's not.
It's not dirt.
Oh.
It's not mud. It's.
It's dog shit.
It's his own feces.
It's alien shit.
Oh, the aliens are really, like, showing out. They don't care that all the people are there. Are the aliens mean? Oh, they're not aliens.
Humans are mean.
Instead of aliens, what turns up is a police helicopter causing everyone to disperse. And back at Jillian's house, we see that she has been drawing and painting pictures of a mysterious mound and that her son Barry is playing the alien tones on his xylophone.
Barry's kidnapped. Did you see that?
Yeah. What? That's
funny. The subtitle told you what was about to happen.
Oh.
The cue is.
What did it say?
I'm going to tell
Barry's
you.
Barry's kidnapping. Yeah.
John Williams, Barry's kidnapping. That's.
This is what Richard Dreyfuss is driving.
Yeah. The death of Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
Does he die?
The explosion of Richard Dreyfuss' character. You'd think as a mom, she would just kind of hold his hand or something.
Get a leash for him or
point,
something.
I mean,
she just is like, oh, no.
Definitely, we're in leash territory.
For sure.
While they're inside, things start to shake, electronics are going haywire, and it is clear that the aliens are descending on the house.
The kid is down.
I know.
Kid's like, let's go.
While all this is happening, Barry manages to run away from his mother and outside through the doggy door.
Let's be real. She's a really bad mom.
I mean, the aliens are kind of dicks.
You know, that's just a shitty
thing. Barry was kind of a dick.
Yeah, Barry's...
That kid deserved what he got. I don't know if I'm enjoying this movie per se. I'm enjoying parts of it.
It's not exactly enjoyable, is it?
It's stressy.
Yeah.
It's a little stressy. And, like, just the cutting back and forth between, like, Truffaut running around the world and, like,
Muncie. Gentlemen, I have played the notes on my synthesizer. And I was just like, yes!
It's just, like, a lot.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. But there are some cool scenes. There's and cool certainly shit. Visually, I think it's cool.
Well, also, like, not to be too writery, but, like, it's really not about the people. Like, the people are just interesting enough to keep this thing going that's really seems to be the interest of Spielberg, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, and if you were to look, examine it a little closer, they're all awful. They're all awful people.
Maybe that's why I don't like it as much. I think I do want it to be about the people, or I do want to connect with the people in the story more.
I mean, every child...
Other than Richard Dreyfuss and the kid who's awful.
Yeah.
I think that every child in this movie needs to be slapped in the face directly, like on sight. Like if I'm, you know,
yeah, it's really a lot of bad behavior.
No, the kids are always, I mean, in Jaws too, I feel like all the kids were bad kids.
Like his disdain for children.
Yeah, he has a disdain for children.
I actually totally respect it now that I think about it. He's definitely just thinks that children are just like these annoying, reckless, noisy creatures. That I guess to some degree they are, but I just feel like it's pretty prominent. And, you know, and the guy, Richard Dreyfuss, he's obviously just a fucking...
He's so unpleasant.
Just unpleasant man to be married to.
Yeah.
I think she is also... She needs to, like, you know...
Take care of herself.
Take care of herself. Get out of the house. Like, get away from this dude. You know, like... It's important. Anyway, let's keep rocking.
None of the characters are really great. This mother who keeps letting her kid just run is just like, oh no, he's through the doggy door. Even though I'm literally like,
yeah, she always takes barricading myself like, in the house.
He can also run, by the way, two times as fast as she can,
and long distances. Like, mm-hmm. Wait a second,
he's gone. He's downfield like 200 yards that fast. Yeah.
Richard Dreyfuss is always like, where's the kid? And she's like, oh, okay, hold on. He's on the highway. You know, the kid is working against her the entire time.
Now we see a bunch of presumably military personnel chartering a bus for Wyoming at the behest of Lacombe and government intelligence.
Okay, these red outfits are dope.
Yeah, where do they find all the secret keepers?
Everyone's just constantly having a
just like running underneath trucks, like crab walking underneath trucks.
I want a sequel where they just follow one of these guys home.
I watch that.
Did they show their whole training?
No, just him at home, just kind of like waiting for the call.
Waiting for the next call, yeah.
The next alien call. Sort of killing time.
Charter.
Doing whatever, one of his hobbies.
Making himself a new jumpsuit.
Yeah, hand sewing.
Did you hear that line?
Yeah, no one's going to believe a plague in this day and age. Believe
right, that's
it.
That's good. All right, we can do that.
Oh, shit.
There is always some joker who thinks he's immune.
Here we go.
To catch you up, after hearing those alien tones in India, Lacombe and scientists broadcast the sounds into outer space and receive back a set of numbers, which the cartographer-interpreter, played by Bob Balaban, determines are coordinates in Death Valley, Wyoming. So, they evacuate that area and plant fake stories about a train wreck spilling a toxic nerve gas so that they can go there to set up a landing zone for the aliens. Meanwhile, back at Roy's house, things are tense.
Why is he so hot and bothered?
This would be Ben Affleck if they made this movie now.
Right. So broody.
And he'd fuck it up somehow.
Why is he brooding? Oh no, he's going to see the shape in the potatoes.
Yeah. He's got a devil's tower to make.
Oh, now everyone's quiet. Why is everyone so goddamn quiet?
Poor Terry Gar, putting up with this shit.
What, couldn't they get a massive, like, Pepsi bottle in the frame instead of that milk thing?
I know.
That anonymous milk?
Missed opportunity.
He's like, I keep seeing this shape because I'm literally making it myself. Why is the kid crying?
Because he thinks his dad's cracking up.
This is a broken family.
Well, I guess you've noticed something that's a little strange with Dad.
Ooh.
After dinner, we see that Roy has been building a model of the Devil's Tower.
Okay, I feel like you're fucking it up, actually.
Got the clay. Like, it's a lot of clay.
Yeah.
Just to be hanging around the house,
yeah.
You mean?
Yeah.
No, he went to the art supply store earlier that day. They didn't show that
when
part.
When Truffaut was doing his report for
yeah,
everybody.
Yeah, that's when he broke away to kind of...
Yeah, they had a timeout to go deal with some bullshit.
In a scene that was cut from the theatrical version, we see Roy's whole family have a collective meltdown. Ronnie is yelling at Roy and the kids, and one of the kids repeatedly slams a door saying, "You're a crybaby." I will say that I am writing this voiceover a month after we recorded this episode, and I accidentally rented the theatrical instead of the director's cut version to write the voiceover to, so my memory of this scene may not be completely accurate, but I do think it was good that this scene was cut out.
Jesus.
What the fuck is wrong with this family?
It's what they call in the psychological business a Spielberg family.
Mm. Like, that was psychopathic, that kid.
I mean, her response is a little psychopathic.
I don't know. I buy it. I think it kind of feels a little old, but I see what he's doing.
Like,
right?
What? Like, she's hysterical? To the point that she's screaming at her kids.
It's like a big everybody's going insane scenario, yeah, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Now the child is crying.
You got the one kid who's
angrily screaming, crying, and slamming the door against the wall.
Because the head of the family is showing weakness and so he doesn't know where he is in the world. Him.
Sure.
He's broken because his father showed weakness. He's disgusted by his father.
He's disgusted by his father.
Yeah. I mean, enraged and disgusted on the purest level.
Yeah, this movie is not what I thought it was. I guess I just didn't realize it was so kind of dark and dramatic.
There's other aspects to it, too.
No.
You'll see.
I've determined there aren't.
After the collective family meltdown, Roy continues to act erratically, throwing dirt and stones through the window into his house, causing Ronnie to leave, taking the kids to her sister's. Then we see that Roy has constructed a large model of the Devil's Tower in his living room, and that separately, Jillian has been doing drawings and paintings of the Devil's Tower. Then they both see an image of the Devil's Tower on their TV, and each decide to drive there.
So her son's just gone.
Yeah.
She's a good artist.
I think he's kind of ill too.
No, he's cool.
His shit is great.
He is.
Like, his fucking sculptures.
No,
amazing.
That shit's amazing. It is. I'm like, where did he get all that? I mean, that's a lot of clay.
It's a lot of clay. And also, he's got the layers going. Like, there's the boulders at the bottom, and then.
Total. I mean, it's a lot of work, and it paid off. I'll say it. It really paid off this time for
him.
There's
those maps again.
Yeah, those pesky maps. He's
shit
just
was cool.
Driving and throwing them in the back seat.
Everyone is just in a constant frazzled state of explosive emotion.
Oh my gosh.
As Roy approaches the Devil's Tower, he is met by throngs of people fleeing the area due to the supposed presence of chemical nerve gas.
I somehow ended up on a one-way highway going the wrong way.
Yeah, because everybody's being evacuated. And he's going in. It's very Holocaust-y.
Yeah, it does feel that way. Didn't he make a Holocaust movie?
Yes, he did.
Sure did.
Schindler's List?
Yep.
Yeah.
I never saw Schindler's List. Roy and Jillian on the road.
I think he lucked out when she took the kids. I think that might have been the best thing that ever happened.
Yeah, now they're both single, you know, kid-free. One of them, the wife, took the kid. Yeah, they have a common interest, which is this mound.
I'm not saying the kids aren't going to grow up to be great.
I'm just saying that they're both lucky that, you know, they've been relieved of their parenting duties because now they can really pursue their passion together. Yeah, I don't know what I expected, but this is not what I expected from this movie.
This is kind of like the best part of the movie.
Did you think it was going to be more like aliens and...
Yeah, and like kid-friendly and like, I don't know.
It's kid-unfriendly.
It is kid-unfriendly.
It's adult-unfriendly.
There is a special niche of annoying that comes with child actors from the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm.
Like National Lampoon's Vacation has some.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've shit, man, so many.
I mean, we don't have time to name them all right now.
But we're going to try. So many. Bad News Bears, and when they went to Japan.
Walter Matthau,
right?
And I guess that's it. That about sums up that list.
Yeah, but these child actors and the choices are just...
I mean, they're being coached to do all that stuff.
I blame Spielberg fully. Yeah. I really do.
Ba 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 Bella Band. This is
Mr. Bella Band.
Man, I worked with Bob Balaban once and I asked him all kinds of questions about shit and he answered everything. And I'm so fucking mad that I didn't know about this or forgot about this.
Oh,
I would have loved to have asked him about Truffaut.
Yeah.
Because like, you know that, you know.
Right. They did all their scenes together. Yeah.
And
he's probably got some stories. Tons
of time.
Truffaut.
François Truffaut is the French guy who's
he's a famous director, right?
Like one of France's great directors. And they all loved all these guys from this era, Spielberg, everybody, they worshipped him. And so you can see like him being like, I'm going to get Truffaut to be in my movie.
Yeah.
You know?
I like hearing that Bob Balaban was nice. And
the nicest guy.
Yeah.
After running into Jillian and continuing to drive towards the Devil's Tower, the two are stopped and separated by the authorities, and Roy gets interrogated by Lacombe and Laughlin. After the interrogation, he is loaded into a helicopter with Jillian and the others who were drawn to the tower.
Damn, man, he's taking his mask off. It's like the coronavirus. The coronavirus is fake.
This is such a corona
movie. Okay, and
Close
Encounters predicted the coronavirus being faked.
Before the helicopter can take off, Roy and Jillian escape, along with some other random guy.
I love that you got this third banana. Something's going to happen
to
that guy.
That guy.
That guy's dead, man.
Absolutely.
His name is Larry.
Don't get Larry, too close.
Yeah. You don't have to get too close to
Larry. Tell me a little bit about yourself, Larry.
Yeah.
Just enough so that I feel like I know you just a little bit before you die.
Yeah, let's not get on a first name basis.
I'm Larry.
Are you finally going home tomorrow?
This is my last job. Yeah.
And then I'm out.
I'm tired of working with my wife.
Oh, man.
God, more noise is coming.
How is there still 42 minutes of this movie? This feels like it's almost the end.
God, Larry's
Larry.
Fucking... He just weighs you down every time.
Larry, take off one of your four sweaters.
I feel like Richard Dreyfuss was really mean to this actor in between takes.
Larry, that's not how you climb things. This is terrible.
Oh no, Larry.
God, Larry, you don't like climb halfway up on your belly and then spin around on one knee. That's not...
Pull up your pant legs.
As Larry, Jillian, and Roy continue up the steep side of the mountain, they are pursued by helicopters and military personnel, and we see the helicopters dropping a noxious gas.
No, Larry, they're not just crop dusting.
And why would you be cool with
fool.
That? Why would you be cool
right.
with the cloud? It's just chemical
fruit. It was the 80s. It was a different time. They didn't realize that crop chemicals were bad for inhalation.
Unfortunately, Larry passes out from the toxic gas, but Roy and Jillian make it to the top where they come upon the secret UFO landing site.
Are they playing basketball?
Are you serious?
Yes.
It's the Intergalactic League.
Okay, the aliens are about to get down. This is where Space Jam came from. They're going to start playing the basketball.
Like, let's give them a show, boys.
That they'll never forget.
You want to do it? Like, just like we practiced.
Light them up.
Sorry, I just wanted to drink more of this weird vodka.
Yeah, I get it. Vodka's like maybe the one thing that you can have no problem trusting when you find it in a freezer in an Airbnb. Right? I mean, what could go wrong, really?
It's frozen.
It could not be vodka.
Yeah,
someone could replace it with some sort of chemical.
But you know that pretty quickly, right? These are the drunk ghost aliens I know.
drunk ghost aliens.
Right? Just shaking mailboxes and like turning all the toys on.
They're just
on.
Like, oh shit, we didn't mean to get this close.
Yeah, totally. Why isn't she losing her fucking shit? Because she's trying to find her kid.
Yeah. She doesn't care about it. She didn't like that kid anyway.
Oh, here we go.
Oh. Okay.
Terrible man.
Richard, Richard Dreyfuss is like, Steven, how am I supposed to not kiss her in this moment? I have to kiss her. I know it doesn't make sense, but that's part of it.
That's what makes it so smart.
So you're saying these two characters both independently depict this place where they are now. They go through all this, see aliens, they're not gonna fuck?
They're not hot to bone?
What do you think about a BJ?
It's never been done before.
I see your point.
In an alien film.
Hear me out. We can imply it.
Don't say no when I propose what I'm gonna propose. Only say yes.
Hear me out. I'm gonna be a fucking nightmare if you don't answer to all my demands.
As they're standing there, three spaceships descend from the sky.
Her son just get catapulted out of the side of the spaceship. Shot out of the sky.
And he's the wrong size.
Yeah. He's twice the size.
He's a exactly giant baby. Exactly.
Bro, that is a large spaceship. Oh, that's not a flattering angle for my boy over there. That's not a good Dreyfuss angle. Gotta be shooting him from on top.
That's a whole lot of anal probes.
They can't get us all, boys. Run to the porta potty. I've got to shit now.
Look at that guy on the left.
Yeah, that chin to face ratio is insane.
Good Lord.
But the neck to face ratio is truly mind-boggling.
It's like they placed a small picture of a face on the neck.
Does she ever get her kid back?
I just don't think that they were concerned about that.
Yeah.
See, oh, drunk ghosts.
Oh, he's trying to riff a little.
Okay.
Dude's drunk in there, like, oh, you want to get busy? You want to battle, huh?
I got some tuba samples.
Hit him with it.
Been waiting to bust these out. It's the Jaws theme.
It really is.
Oh, shit.
Giant shark descends from the ship.
It just pops open.
Yeah.
And just a water and a shark just fall out. Just flapping.
After a bunch of peacocking from the ships, they leave and a much larger ship comes in its place, has a little jam session with the scientists, and then opens up the bottom of the ship where people start to emerge.
Are those humans that were abducted?
Yep.
They were like, they said we couldn't leave until you battled them on the keyboard.
They called you bitches.
That's the squadron, right? That disappeared on training mission in 1945.
Oh, disappeared with the planes?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't age?
Correct. Because time is...
a construct.
It's a construct. It's an elastic construct.
Okay.
Doesn't look very happy to be home.
No. Navy.
He was like, it was awesome in there.
Yeah.
Why the fuck did they bring me back?
You should have seen my space wife.
Where's the kid? Oh, there he is.
And he'll never be able to relate to anyone.
I'm crazier now.
She's like, well, I was sort of hoping you were gone for good, but okay. No, it's good. I'm happy. Haven't shown any sort of
let's
feelings
check you
about
for damage.
You. About you being gone until now.
After the humans walk out of the ship, they are followed by a strange, long-armed alien who stands up and raises its arms, similar to that gif of the Night King from Game of Thrones. You know the one.
Can you dig it?
Let me see you make some noise.
For the alien crew.
Wait, are there mad aliens out? Oh, shit. But one is just tall and skinny.
I know, right? That's the baby one.
They actually grow smaller as they grow older.
Now we see the people wearing the red jumpsuits from before, along with Roy, who is now also wearing a red jumpsuit, lining up so that the aliens can pick which of the people they want to take back with them on the ship.
It's like they're prostituting them.
Yeah, get your ass in there. You're ours now.
Just leave your family. They don't matter anymore.
Yeah, he's like, whatever, fuck them. She's like, I'm just now realizing how inappropriate it was that you kissed me before when... I'm clearly, like, going through some shit, and my kid had been recently kidnapped by aliens.
And aren't you married?
Yeah. I don't remember seeing the inside of the ship.
Yeah, me neither. Maybe that special edition material. Hmm?
Yeah, I feel like I remember it being a whole thing about... them going inside the ship for the recut for the special edition, blah blah blah.
Yeah, it looks way different, like the whatever, the graphics or whatever. This looks like animation now. Right? It doesn't look like the same effects as before. I feel like they could have ended it with him just walking into the ship.
Yeah, that's what the original end was.
That's what the original was.
This is totally unnecessary. It doesn't add anything to the
story. Classic director's cut. It's never as good as the original.
Yeah.
All the condos.
Welcome to prison.
Alien laundry hanging off balconies.
Alien laundry is going to be my next band name. What's up, we're Alien Laundry? Everybody's like, well, I guess we're going to just... kind of go home now. I don't know. I'm standing here for a while, so...
The ship prepares to leave with Roy inside, and we see Barry, now reunited with Jill, waving.
He's like, goodbye, wink. I will carry out the plan you sent me here to do, wink. Start by killing my mom. Yeah.
I will be president in 2024. Yeah.
This shit looks like a casino. This is a straight up casino in space.
All right. What a Steven Spielberg film it was. Well, that was that movie. Close Encounters.
So this goes way
back to the near kind.
I don't understand why people like why. Why did this dude want to make two Alien movies?
I know he was working through something. So one of Dreyfus's kids was played by one of Dreyfus's kids.
Oh, really?
Justin Dreyfus. Oh, then you got Lance Hendrickson. Then you got
Carl Weathers. Police.
Look at all those men's names.
Yeah, for real.
Look at all those predominantly white men's names.
Oh, God. Kirk Raymond, Dirty Tricks number 4.
Dirty Tricks number... What is Dirty Tricks?
Pretty good title. Pretty good credit to have, Dirty Tricks number 4.
I don't know what the fuck that means. Yeah, I don't think I liked that movie that much.
Right.
Yeah.
I just didn't find it that entertaining. I think visually it was interesting. And like...
It was kind of fascinating and mind-blowing at the time. When this
yeah. No, I'm sure.
Totally. You know, firstly, the visuals were...
No, the visuals were great.
Unparalleled at the time.
Absolutely.
And I think even for now, I mean, I think they look great and... In general, I love... I don't know if any of that stuff qualifies as practical effects.
Probably.
Because I love practical effects.
Yeah, I think a lot of it
really
does.
Really great, yeah. I think visually it's really stunning.
In fact, probably like just about all of it.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and then superimposed...
Possible exception of the shit at the end, maybe. But something you may not have known, they used a real spaceship for this movie.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It's the first movie ever to utilize an alien spaceship in the filming.
How much did that cost?
I don't know. I hadn't even thought about that. We should look it up.
Yeah. They're like, okay, you do propaganda for us.
Exactly.
And we will lend you a spaceship.
I just got to say, there are some weird fucking moments. None of them had to do with aliens.
Yeah. The weird family watching the kid.
Intense, like, there was a dark cloud of like abuse and alcoholism over that.
No, I mean, I meant the family that's watching, that's just like sitting in the woods when the kid runs out and they're all just like.
Yeah, the Okies.
Yeah.
The like.
They were like.
But maybe they were hypnotized itinerant Dust Bowl family. By the aliens. But yes, the whole family dynamic was definitely fucked up. And
you know, when the kid, I can't get over the fact that he just stuck this slamming woman in there. Out of nowhere, he added another layer. They were already screaming at each other. And then he added another layer of a child screaming into the camera while weeping and slamming a door and screaming, "Cry, baby! You're a cry!" And weeping. That's like the most intense 5 seconds of a film I've ever seen in my life that just popped out of nowhere. Like, and for him to just ignore it, like, well, kids will be kids.
I think it's about Vietnam.
I think it is.
You know?
I think it is about Vietnam.
I think it's about the loss of trust in our leaders. And
he represented the government and the child was representing the people.
Yeah.
Or the child represented the soldiers that were disgusted with the people in America who were anti-war.
Right.
Interesting.
The crybabies.
All those crybabies in the 60s.
Vietnam. You told me never to cry. Now you're crying. Like, what the fuck type of family?
And I wonder if that was the Dreyfus kid.
It wasn't.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, we have to look it up.
Because he was
Which one is
up,
Justin Dreyfus?
Dreyfus was like, cry!
Exactly.
Cry like I taught
you. Dude's like pinching him under the table, like digging his fingers and just
sticking a knife into his leg.
What did I show you?
Yeah, I don't think I would ever watch that movie again.
I'm glad I watched it again. I don't think I'd run around saying that you got to see it, but it's pretty fucking great. I don't know. I take it back. I would say.
It's pretty great.
Totally. I wouldn't watch it again. I'm good. But if somebody hadn't seen it, I would definitely think they should see it.
I just don't think that I would ever sit and derive enjoyment from watching that movie.
Would you stand and watch it?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Also, by the way, talk about like a movie that should be seen in a big fucking movie theater versus on this.
Sure.
On a TV.
True. But then you start to think about the sound system and you think about how hard that's going to be.
Imagine that door slamming scene and just with like giant speakers.
The quadraphonic.
Right, just punishing you with.
punishing you. The whole first 6 minute intro scene where the wind was just so fucking strong that it was equal to or louder than every other sound that was happening. That was a long
and
intro.
They just are going to have that conversation out there with all this, what I assume to be sand blowing into their mouths.
Oh, yeah. God, that like, being the first
nobody's
scene.
Nobody's mouth is covered.
That being the first COVID scene note, is such an intense way to like jump into a movie, and then also it's confusing. I mean, yes, we were talking, but it still is very confusing when you're just like immediately thrown into a scene where actors are just yelling over loud sand blowing about something you don't know.
Man, this dude... That was his shit.
Just in the
first couple of the movies, he was like, everyone's yelling at every line at the same time. Yeah. If I were an alien and I had a ship and I came here and everyone was just yelling all the time like that.
Maybe like,
no one was stopping
peace.
To listen to each other. I do like the one dude who just comes out and is like, "What's up?" Just raises the skinny alien. Are you motherfuckers ready?
Yeah, that is like. Yeah, that also is sort of
that was weird too, because then
weird.
Then he just disappeared.
Yeah, then he disappeared, and then it's just little guys kind of just like
oh, hello.
It's an interesting movie, and you know the good thing about this is that the next one is my pick, so we can finally watch something good again. Like
what? What's it going to be?
I don't know. Like Bring It On or something.
Wait a minute.
I just felt classic. My hope just die a little bit.
Have you not seen it? Bring It On?
I've seen Bring It On.
Okay, so
one
it's gotta
time?
Be a movie he hasn't
well,
seen though.
But he if he can't
try and
if he can't remember it,
seen.
Then it doesn't.
I remember they were like, "Bring It On, girl." And the other one was like,
"Bring It On's
you
good.
Bring It On, bitch."
We'll figure it out. So it'll be something fun and
I'm
it might be a 90s teen movie. Well,
you try your dance steps on me, then I'll do mine. And mine'll be better, so
no, that's perfect. I guess you really have seen it. You've proved that.
What happens?
The end.
The end. Contest over.
Well, DV, did you enjoy being on our podcast?
I really loved being on your podcast. It was really enjoyable. I feel like I got a lot off my chest.
That is going good. On the podcast.
I know.
Nothing you said is going on the podcast.
I know.
It's going to be tough, but that's I'm going to edit you out completely.
I know. I think you can do it.
It's going to sound weird.
I have faith in you. Skip.
All right. Well, it's late. We're going to sign off.
Signing off. Peace out from Amsterdam.
Peace out from Amsterdam, indeed.
Thank you.
The Panducto Quarantcast is created by Jamie Moline and me, Emily Panic. Editing and production is by me. If you like the podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. And thanks for listening. Okay, see you next time.